our TSN hockey insider, Dave Poulin. As always, a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. How are you doing this morning, Dave?
Doing very well, gentlemen. I'm going to have a lot harder time on the face-offs this morning than I normally do with Simmer. I'm aware of what's going on, and Simmer's, I can usually do about 9 different things on the face-offs with him, Jamie, and he hasn't figured any of it out, but I know I'm going to have a harder time today.
Is this entire, like, 15 minutes going to be about, you know, the role of the checking forward, how important the checking forward is and was in yesterday's game and is today's game?
If you look at the scoring records through that time, maybe not, Jamie.
Right? Exactly. Hey, listen, when it comes to faceoffs, that's how I started getting ice time in the NHL. So they were important. I will say
it's the truth. And we used to scrimmage a lot. And in my early days, we were scrimmaging and they were dropping the pucks in practice. And I was facing off against Sittler and Bobby Clark. And it was like, I didn't win a draw for my first 3 months and said, okay, if I want the puck, then I have to win the draw. So you are so correct.
There you go. All right, let's talk about, let's start with tonight's game. Jamie and I were talking in the first couple of hours. I mean, Brady Tkachuk's been in the NHL. This is now his fifth year, and Matthews finishing up his seventh year. And they played each other against each other a lot, Dave. But Matthew, for the most part, was in Calgary, and Brady, of course, was here in Ottawa. This is probably the first time in which they have played a truly meaningful game against each other with something on the line. How do you think it's going to play out tonight just from a Tkachuk brother point of view?
I don't think it changes the way they play. I really don't. I don't think it changes their exchange of Christmas gifts. I think they're going to play exactly the same way they play, and it's going to be hard. And they're going to do whatever is in their power for their team to win. And that's the beauty of the way they play. And what Matthew has done this year in Florida is really remarkable. And if you look at this last stretch of games, and I was down there 10 days ago maybe, and if you look at their last stretch of games, a lot of them they were trailing in, and they've struggled in the last few, obviously, but they're trailing. And if you look at who leads the comeback every time, who has the assist, who has the goal, it's Matthew Tkachuk. And I think he's played better than they could have possibly hoped for in that move to Florida. The rest of the team hasn't responded the way they were hoping, but he has. And what Brady does on an everyday basis, and maybe no more magnified than the start of Saturday night's game and the way that he imposes himself on that hockey game and makes himself a factor. But I look back when we were talking about this and the potential of them getting back in this race, he looked at those two Florida games and said, well, if they get to where they have to go, you know, at some point that Florida was going to get going in the right direction. And they essentially have a 2-game series over the next handful of games with Florida, very similar to their back and back with Detroit. And that turned around the last month for me was that back-to-back to Detroit. They just manhandled Detroit. And Detroit coming in was playing very well. They'd actually inserted themselves, I think, at one point into the playoffs for a brief moment. And so they were playing great. They came in, and Ottawa played arguably its best 2 games of the year. That's what I'm looking for in these 2 games with Florida. And I always thought, okay, if you stay within 4 of Florida, then you've controlled Florida. And that's exactly what they've done with literally 9 games left in the season. And it's quite impressive from what they've battled back to, the fact that they're playing these games with 9 games left in the season.
Good stuff, Dave. Hey, I wanted to ask you, one of the narratives for the Sens, just kind of switching gears a little bit, and you talked about Brady imposing his will on games, but one of the narratives was the overall defense of this team. And Jake Sanderson's come in, and he's been phenomenal. I think he had high expectations, and he's probably exceeded those, how well he's played. Brännström has basically allotted himself now as a regular here, and then the addition of Chychrun. So knowing all that, the defense is a little better. Where do you see Tyler Cleveland? What have you heard? And would you insert him in the lineup down the stretch here for a few games?
I would insert him, and I think he does get some playing time, and that may be an agreement that they have with him signing. We don't know that. But he's different. And I have some pretty good contacts in the college game, and their read of Sanderson coming in was absolutely bang on. And, they compared him to the two guys that played 2 years of college hockey, and that was Hughes and McCarr. And then they said, but he could be better defensively earlier. And he is. But Cleveland's different in terms of a little bit more throwback, a little bit more Mark Methot, if I dare, in terms of more physical, steadier, And it's interesting, Jamie, when I look at Montreal, You know, they've brought as many as five defensemen into the lineup in the same night that were rookies this year. They're all different. They are all different. There are not two guys you say, well, that's exactly the same player. And I think you need that mix. And he'd be more on the physical side. He'll make the big hit. Now, there have been those that have compared him to Jacob Trouba. I think that's a little bit of a stretch. And I think Trouba's, you know, a little more of the last generation in terms of that. But in terms of what you get in this generation of a hitting defenseman, a big physical guy, he's the model. Now, it's going to take him time to get up to speed. And we know, we understand that and respect that. But I think the fact that he's different, particularly from the left shot defenseman, particularly from Shabbat, Sanderson, and Chychrun. And of those three, I think Sanderson's already the most defensive of those three. He'd be a little bit more on the defensive side of Sanderson.
You coached 10 years at Notre Dame, so you know the transition it takes from college hockey to play in the National Hockey League. For a guy who plays a physical style like Cleven does that necessarily translate easily to the National Hockey League, or will it be more difficult?
Well, in many ways, it'll be more comfortable for him, I think, and because he'll have more willing bangers along the wall and in the corner, and he's going to run into a lot of big, strong guys. But it's not always the open ice. You know, when we talk about hitting, I talk about hitting in terms of stopping the cycle and just hitting and pinning, and not necessarily the big open ice, you know, center ice hit where somebody goes flying. And that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about puck separation and net front separation from the puck and able to control the front of the net. So I think in those regards, it's more of a contained quarter. It's interesting with guys that play a controlled game, they'll come in and from the American League to the National League, and they'll say in a lot of ways, the National League is easier because there are more people in control. You have a clue of what people are doing, whereas in the American League, you know, there's a lot of different play that goes in a lot of different directions on a given night. Goalies will tell you the same thing, and because it's controlled and not as out of reach. And so I think, you know, the biggest thing is how many people he'll meet that are as strong as he is, and the speed and timing of everything.
Switching gears, I want to, I'm really curious on your thoughts going from defense to centerman, because we all know how important centermen are. Of course. Well, it's the one player on the ice that supports the D in the defensive zone and the wingers in the
all
offensive
zone.
All right,
you don't have to. Okay.
So it is what it is. We are who we are. When you look at the Senators, again, this is more of a bigger picture question. They have such a bright future down the middle. Stützle, superstar. Norris, of course, he's been injured this year. Pinto, Ridley, Gregg. There's Kastelic. But because of the injuries, like they're one potential injury away, and the youth at center, do you think this is an area that they should look around at maybe bringing in a veteran center that can help out this lineup in the next couple of years?
If I've got Stützle, Norris, and Pinto healthy, then, and I can put Pinto in the three hole, then it would only be as a fourth line center. And if you're comfortable with the development of Kastelic, then I would say that you're going to be fine. But I think depth at the position would be fine. But it would be in more of the four hole if I've got those three centermen healthy. Now, the thing about Stützle as your number one center, his handles are so often that he's going to turn the puck over, as he did the other night a couple of times in the defensive zone. A couple of times he turned the puck over and you're like, oh, man. But he handles the puck so much. And if you think about where he turned the puck over, one was on the Mercer goal. The other one was just down low. He's low. He's below the goal line on those plays. So he is supporting the defenseman and is helping out. And that's the important thing about it, is he's there, he's in position, and he wants to do the right thing. But I think if I've got those three guys healthy, Jamie, then I'm not looking for a top three line guy, because I think they are centermen. I'm not interested in moving Pinto the wing. I think he's a centerman. I think he supports the puck well, and Norris is definitely a centerman. So I'm fine if you're talking about a guy in the four hole. And Kastelic is pushing or on the wing some nights, and I'm fine with that.
And I thought both of the Stützle turnovers that eventually led to the goals, he just, it was more He just healed the passes, right? It was just
exactly.
Just lifted.
It wasn't trying to do something ridiculous. Yeah. It was a straight mishandle, particularly on the Mercer goal. It was just a flat out fan, which is going to happen. That's a whole different topic about sticks and everything else, because I think a lot of guys get locked into the stick they love, but they can't change their stick. Like we used to alter the heel or the toe a little bit. They get used to one model and they stick with it far too long, but that's a different story for a different day. It's a good topic for a day with no games.
There you go. All right. Well, I'll scratch that down and bring it up another day. All right. We got a couple of minutes left here. I wanted to touch on another couple of topics. The Boston Bruins yesterday go down to Carolina, end up beating the Hurricanes in a shootout. This is right now the best two teams, not only in the Eastern Conference, but in the National Hockey League, and may very well be an Eastern Conference final preview. The Bruins chose to sit out Bergeron, Marchand, and Lindholm. Didn't even bring them on the trip. We're 3 weeks exactly away from the start of the Stanley Cup playoffs. In terms of resting players, and the Bruins are home and cooled, we know that. Do you like starting to rest players this early? Like, what is the play for the Bruins specifically and Jim Montgomery with them really having nothing to play for at this stage?
I still think you've got to be selective, and I've been in the position of being asked if I wanted to rest. I personally didn't. I'd rather take a day off of practice than miss a game. But when you've got 119 points and there's still, 18 points on the table, you have the prerogative to do whatever you choose to do. And to think they went down there and, by the way, won the hockey game on the road without those three guys, but in a back-to-back situation, there's significant mileage on those guys. And, they have that choice. They're that good. I was in there Thursday night. Man, are they good. And they've got an edge to them. And we talked about this a little bit on Friday, Jamie. They've got an arrogant/confident edge to them that is over the top. Like, you're not even supposed to hit them right now, according to them. And they are so on top of it. And if they did, and then that was the night that it was Pitlick who hit Bergeron. Well, they kept that in mind the entire game. Like, they ran him. They didn't just pay him back once. They paid him back 17 times. And it was like you weren't going to do that to their captain. And they're just right on top of it. And against Carolina, against Tampa, they were the same way. Now, it's interesting because Garnet Hathaway is not going to go up against heavyweights every night. He won't last doing it, but he's annoying and he's raspy and he gets involved. He's willing, but it'll be interesting to see how it plays out, but man, are they good right now. They are just flat out good, and they can pretty much do what they want to do down the stretch here. They've earned that.
What did you think about the Boston-Tampa game on Saturday, which started with, it looked like it was more of Tampa's choosing, that they wanted to, start with a physical presence, and there were a couple of fights right off the bat. Is that frustration from the Lightning based on the way they've been playing? Is this tone setting for a potential playoff spot, playoff series? What did you make of the way that game started in particular?
I actually thought it was more about them, no matter who they were playing that day. It just happened to be Boston. I really do. And, they were playing the best team. But I think that was about their own game and not letting the other team dictate the tone of the game early. And the Colton thing is interesting because Colton's not a player that's going to get involved. But I think if you're Maroon, you're saying, okay, I want to grab Hathaway here. You've got to almost be a distraction and get something else going first. So the attention of the referees goes that way. And then I can get a hold of Hathaway and no one can get in there to break it up. So to me, there was a little gamesmanship and a little planning that went into that in terms of making sure you can isolate a player, because Hathaway had been a thorn in their side when he was in Washington, guys, and he had caused them some real aggravation. So I think there's a little carryover there with that specific player.
All right. Last one for you. You wrote an article yesterday in the Star in which you talked about the number of moves the Leafs had made at the deadline and leading up to the deadline. A lot of new faces for Sheldon Keefe to kind of incorporate into the lineup with, not a huge number of games left. Can you kind of expand a bit upon what your story, was about and how you think this might play out in terms of that?
Well, I referenced Sheldon Keefe as a chemistry teacher, and I love that everyone uses the word chemistry in a positive light, like everything is smooth with chemistry. And I don't know about you two guys, but in my chemistry class, man, there were some things that didn't go that well. And
that was part of the fun, though.
Well, I didn't go to chemistry class, so I don't know.
But it's just a funny thought because you knew you had guys in your class say, what if I put that with that? What would happen? And, you know, when they had big goggles on and they were sitting with big gloves on at their desk, and chemistry doesn't always go well. And I was referencing, you know, just with the Leafs have tried so many different things, and particularly with the defense, and we've talked about this so much in Ottawa, I would be more prone to putting guys together and leaving them together and letting them develop a partnership. And in Toronto, that just hasn't happened. A lot of nights they've dressed seven defensemen, so let alone partners, they don't even know which side they're playing or where they're playing. And they've got the luxury of doing that, as Boston does, because they've racked up the points. But I think at some point it has to settle here. And six guys is a lot of new guys. And actually, if you count Joseph, it's seven. And if Matthew Nyes comes in from the University of Minnesota, it'll be eight. So there could be as many as eight guys on a 20-man roster that are different from what you had at the start of the year. Well, that's a lot. That's a lot on the ice. That's a lot off the ice. And so my gist of the article was just that, you know, in this chemistry class, the coach has to at some point settle into a lineup, I think, you know, with less than 10 games left in the year, and go in and say, okay, you know, these are the lines and you're going to be playing together. And I guess the best with Matthews and Marner and Nylander and Tavares have switched around so much, I think they can do whatever they want with that. But it's not as easy for an Achari or a Lafferty or some of the guys they picked up to be as smooth as that. So that was the point of it, was that, you know, like, you know that Marchand and Bergeron are going to be together. And you know that Pastrnak and Krejci are going to be together. And you know where DeBrusque is going to be. And with the best teams, I think at some point it has to settle.
All right. Good stuff. On that note, we'll let you go. I know you're on your way to Philly. You got a game, what, tomorrow night?
I do. Okay. I do. I've got Montreal and Philly tomorrow night. Montreal is playing well, and they're fun to watch. So all right. It'll be a good game.
Good stuff. We'll chat again on Wednesday. Thanks, Dave. Appreciate the time this morning.
Have a great day, guys.